Reverend A.R. Bernard, Rabbi Joseph Pachasnik, the Rev and the Rabbi. Talk Radio 77 WABC and the all-new WABCRadio.com.
Welcome back. I'm Rabbi Joseph Pachasnik.
And I'm Reverend A.R. Bernard.
Reverend Bernard, we have someone who is a commentator, political commentator, a talk show host, a member of our WABC radio family. When I was very young, I used to listen to him on the air. He's always someone who has something to say and not afraid to say it. And I'm very grateful that Dominic Carter has consented to coming on the program with us. Good morning.
Good morning. It is such an honor to be here with the Rev and the Rabbi. And I have to say this before you ask me a single question. I have to focus on each of you for a second. One of the great luxuries of having a 40-year career in journalism is I can tell the truth. I say how I feel, and that's that. And so I guess, Rabbi, I'll start with you. You and I go way, way, way back. Mm-hmm. And you embraced me before I became a big name personality, if you will, in New York. And you've always been a straight shooter. And I thank you tremendously for what the work you've done with the fire department as it relates to September 11th, as it relates to bringing the different communities in the tri-state area together. Rabbi, you are phenomenal. Now, Pastor, I got to, before you guys ask,
don't make it better question, than my, don't make better than what you said about me.
Pastor, there's no other way to say this. You are the man, the largest congregation within our community. You are a spiritual leader for so, so many of us. Each and every Sunday morning, people line up to listen to your message from God and the things that you have done for the community. You see, there are people that talk, and then there are people that get things done. And both of you are individuals that get things done. Reverend Bernard, in terms of your housing within the community, daycare centers within the community, overnight daycare, you are phenomenal. And I just think both of you, and that's why I'm here on this early Sunday morning, because I think the world of both of you. I really do.
Wait a minute, you're calling this hour early?
Rabbi, this is the is the best guest and introduction we've ever had in the history of this show. Let me just say that. Dominic, thank you for those wonderful words, and especially about Rabbi.
Well, let me tell you, and may God forgive you for not. So let me just say this, Rev.
The show's over. This is a wrap.
Let me tell you this, Rev.
I give the benediction.
We recorded it here. So one day when we leave this world, because you always want to know, what are they going to say about you when you're no longer here? We're going to play that so people will hear it. All right, so that would be the eulogy in 120 years. Thank you, Dominic. You really made it a lot easier for us. Now I can breathe easier. Yeah.
But I meant what I said. There's no joking in what I said. Both of you guys are phenomenal in terms of the leadership that you provide to our city and country.
Thank you.
Thank you, Dominic.
Said something which I think all of us can relate to. Those of us who've been on the air for some years. Is you've done it for, 40 years, and you're not afraid to take a stand. That doesn't come without a price. You know you're going to get criticized when you take a strong stand on a controversial issue, but that doesn't deter you. Where does that spine come from?
I think, Rabbi Pachasnik, it comes from the fact of when you grow up poor in this city, as I have, with no father in your life and a mentally ill mother, you realize, and I didn't always understand this, but you realize that when God is on your side, who can be against you? Seriously. Mm-hmm. And what I mean by that is I have an obligation to my community, and my community is defined as the New York tri-state area, to tell the truth. And so I'm not afraid to take a position because it's based on truth. I try my best, Rabbi, and it's a great question, to not do the talking point thing. My situation is, here it is, straight from the heart, whether you like it or don't like it, here is the truth. And I think I've built up enough credibility because I believe firmly in you treat someone the same way you would like to be treated, right? And that's with courtesy and respect. And that's what I do in terms of giving a position on the issues. It's with respect, but it is the truth. And if you have a problem with the truth, then I'm sorry. But here's the truth, and I'm going to give it to you straight, period. Mm.
But, you know, you have had an illustrious career, those 40 years as a journalist and political commentator. You've interviewed Cardinal O'Connor, Bill Clinton, Nelson Mandela, Vincente Fox, Condoleezza Rice, Hillary Clinton, even Charlie Rangel. I mean, you've interviewed some incredible individuals. What was the most impacting interview for you?
That's a great question, Pastor. By far, to you and to Rabbi Potasnik, it was Nelson Mandela during his historic visit to New York during the early 1990s. One, the reason why it stands out is because that was the interview that told me that I could do anything. I know you guys are followers of history as religious leaders, and you're well aware of the fact, each of you, Pastor, that when Mandela came to town, Dinkins had been mayor, I believe, for under a year. And when Mandela came to town, 15,000 journalists from around the country wanted that interview. Only two got it. Ted Koppel of the highly successful at the time Nightline, and myself. And the reason why it stands out to me so much, Pastor, is something that I know you and the rabbi deal with in terms of congregations, the power of forgiveness, right? So I've had a rough past in terms of my mother with her mental illness. And I went through a lot. And it wasn't until I forgave my mother. Unfortunately, I'm coming back to Mandela. But it wasn't until I forgave my mother that I felt like a cloud or 800 pounds had been lifted off my soul. No matter how much success I had as a journalist, I felt like it was raining every day of my life because I did not forgive my mother for her mental illness and all the bad things. She was a chronic paranoid schizophrenic and all the bad things that happened with my life. And the reason why I say Mandela was the most important interview by far is so I'm in Gracie Mansion and the State Department is protecting Mr. Mandela. And I kid you not, Pastor, I felt like I'm in a room at Gracie Mansion and Bill Lynch had arranged for me to interview Mr. Mandela. And I'm waiting for the door to turn and for in to walk Nelson Mandela. And I kid you not, I felt like, Pastor and Rabbi, I felt like there was an angel on one side that said to me, Dominic, you can do it. And then there was a devil-like character on the other side that said, who are you kidding? Public school education, you can't handle this. Get up and walk out of this room before you embarrass yourself. So in walks Nelson Mandela, and with his, yes, young man, that's his tone, the way he talked, his South African tone. And so we're waiting to go live on the radio. And I said, Mr. Mandela, I often get the best story from people before we go live, in either in radio or in television. And I said, Mr. Mandela, can I ask you a question? Yes, young man. And I said, you were in jail, not American jail, South African jail, for 25 years, and you're not bitter. And he looked at me and giggled, and he said, young man, for me to be bitter and angry, it would have given in to my captors. And when I thought about that, Pastor, in answering your question, and also to Rabbi, I said to myself, who are you, meaning Dominic Carter, to ever be angry ever again going forward based on what Nelson Mandela told you himself? So it would be Mr. Mandela, Pastor, by far.
Wow. Interesting. Tremendous.
where Sharansky, who was imprisoned by Soviet Union years ago, he was a dissident, and he dared to speak out about, you know, the horrors living in the Soviet Union and the right to go free, had a similar reaction. He wasn't going to give in to his captors. He wasn't going to let them have the last word. And that's a great statement of courage. So let me ask you this, Dominic. I find today there are many young people who are not proud of being an American. You hear all of the negative stuff. There's something, you know, when we were growing up, we still felt America had its, you know, blemishes, but it also had a face that we could be proud of. What's your feeling on that?
I agree with you, Rabbi Potasnik, 1,000%. I don't understand. Listen, we have a right, a First Amendment right in this country, and knock yourself out. If you don't agree with an issue, you have every right to protest. But I firmly believe with all my heart what's going on as it relates to Israel and the innocent people of Israel. You have innocent Palestinians as well, mm-hmm. but 1,000 people killed October 7th that did nothing to no one. As we speak, Pastor and Rabbi, there are women, the truth of the matter is, on this Sunday morning, there are women hostages being raped right now as we speak. And it is disgusting. It is horrible. And I am proud, very proud, to be an American. And I look at people like Reverend Bernard, your co-host, and I know he's very proud to be an American. I know you're very proud to be an American. And I take my cues, I really do, off of tremendous leaders like you two. And so, if you're a college student, you want to protest, again, knock yourself out. But let's keep in mind what has happened here. And we've got to get back to understanding the fact that we should be tremendously proud, all of us, what's and all, to be an American. And that when I found that out, Rabbi, to fully and completely answer your question, I was straight out of graduate school, Syracuse University, the late 1980s, and I was sent full-time to cover the presidential campaign of the Reverend Jesse Jackson. So we would travel to 4 or 5 states a day. And what it made me realize, we also traveled to Jamaica. We traveled to the Persian Gulf, Bahrain, Saudi Arabia, many places. And it was the first time, again, I've never had a father in my life. It was the first time that I had been exposed to the world. But let me tell you what I found out, Rabbi. The more we traveled to different places, the more it made me miss New York, being an American. Especially my daughter was a few weeks old at the time, and I was on the road for Thanksgiving and Christmas. And this is a true story, Pastor and Rabbi. When I came back to America and landed from the Persian Gulf, at Newark Airport, I swear to you, I bent down and kissed the ground because that's how glad I was to be back home. And we've got to change this, Rabbi, in terms of this sentiment of Americans hating Americans. I really don't understand it.
Rabbi, it's a great opportunity to segue. This past week, you and I and the Cardinal actually met with one of the families, the Nutra family, whose son, Omer, is one of the hostages. Mm-hmm. He has been from the very beginning. And they don't know if he's still alive. They're living with hope and doing everything they can to keep the attention of the American public on it. He, Omer, was born in the United States, grew up in New York, Long Island, New York, and made a decision to settle down in Israel and become part of the military before all of this broke out. But he was taken captive in a very brutal way. And it's not until you sit with these families and you hear their pain that you understand that these are human beings. These are lives, whether Palestinian, Israeli lives, these are human beings. And we have to transcend all of the political rhetoric and really focus on the reality. Terrorism is wrong, and the victims of terrorism must be addressed. And I just thought about that. Rabbi, just weigh in on it.
Rabbi, I want to just go a little bit further on that. And Dominic, I think you would appreciate it. Sitting with, this is an Israeli family, two Jews who are heartsick. You know, a heart can be heartbroken and a heart can be hopeful. They have that kind of hybrid. You know, the sorrow and the optimism that he's going to come home. But sitting with the cardinal, the reverend, rabbi, and seeing the beauty of the interfaith relationships that are shared was very reassuring to them. Because it's very easy to say nobody cares. This is our pain. The world doesn't give a damn. And yet you find there are people who care. There are people who want to hold you during this difficult time. That was a proud moment. Talking about being proud to be an American, I was proud to be an American Jew living in New York with such wonderful people around me.
Wonderful for me to hear that story, Rabbi and Pastor, of you two meeting with the cardinal and the family. And you know, Pastor Bernard, you are, this is what makes you the top leader, certainly one of them, in our area, in terms of you stating boldly just right now that terrorism is wrong. You didn't put a name before that or a group before that. Bottom line, terrorism is wrong. And Rabbi Potasnik, it breaks my heart. It really does. For what these are Israeli families are going through, what these young ladies are going through, what that one-year-old child that celebrated his first birthday is going through in captivity. And, you know, the politics of it all, Hamas is horrible and Hamas has to go, but we've got to find a way to bridge the gap. And see, I see each of you, I really do, always have, as bridging the gap. You do it in our area. You've done it locally for so long, but you're now taking it worldwide. See, and we need both of you on a serious note, because we've got some serious problems.
You know, listening to the two of you, it's not a moral leap to condemn Hamas. You don't have to contextualize it. You have to say, as you said, terrorism is wrong. And what I find so disheartening is that there are people who we thought were our friends who were silent on October the 7th. There are people who we thought would stand with us who were missing on October the 7th. So I don't know why people have to equivocate, why they can't condemn Hamas without any and or but, and simply say this is an offense against humanity. So it's heartening to hear what you said.
Well, Rabbi, let me be clear. This is an offense against humanity, what Hamas is doing. And again, the reason why I praise the both of you is because I'm serious when I say this. I look back in history. So we're in Black History Month, and certainly Rabbi Potasnik, you're more qualified to talk about Black History Month than I am. And Reverend Bernard, Pastor Bernard, you are a living legend. You know, no one can talk about Black History Month better than you can. But with that said, so we're here in February, right? And what I do, gentlemen, is I think that the connection, the historical connection, has gotten lost. I really do. Between the African-American community and the Jewish community, the bond, right? I asked this question, and I'm serious. Where would civil rights be without the Jewish brothers banding together with their African-American brothers historically that have laid down their lives for the rights of African-Americans? And I think we need to think about that bond and not just act like it amounts to nothing, because people literally died for the right to vote and for African Americans to have rights. And I can't think of a group that was more in the forefront outside of African Americans than Jewish Americans.
Yeah. And unfortunately,
and that's history. That is history, Rabbi, going back to even before into the early 1800s. That is history, that union between Jews and blacks, because we felt a camaraderie. We felt a certain connection with our plights. That's very, very real, Dominic.
So why can't we get that narrative told in a very forthright fashion, without hesitation, without qualification? Why can't that narrative be told in the public schools? Instead, we hear hateful rhetoric that we hear over and over again, often expressed by young people. How do we change the tide?
How we change it is we've got to find a way for voices like your voices, Rabbi and Pastor, to be more prominent in the mainstream media than the flamethrowers and the flamethrowers, pardon me. And you know exactly what I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. You know, division sells, right? And neither one of you are about division. You're about bringing people together. And so we've got to find a way to connect with young people. We've got to find a way to get, for example, young African-Americans back into the church under the leadership of Reverend Bernard. There is no lose under that situation. We've got to find a way to bridge the gap the way you two have on the radio for years. And that's why this program that you do every Sunday has been so successful. And it's also successful because both of you, you speak from the heart, you come from the heart, and you try and bring people together. We've got to stop making excuses. Mm-hmm. Making excuses is something that has led to the demise of many people, in particular young people. There's always an excuse when it comes to why can't we just bridge the gap? Oh, this one has more than me. That one has more than me. Let's stop making excuses. Let's look at the man in the mirror and let's come together. We can do it. It's been done before, but it will require hard work.
Well said. Well said. Amen to that. Let me raise a question here, because I keep hearing this language again and again since October 7th, especially. And that's the phrase moral clarity. How do you gentlemen understand moral clarity?
Well, I think all of us here are devotees of our religious traditions, and we have to look no further than the Bible, than the prophets, to know that there is a foundational truth that exists. And when you're talking about hatred, for example, you don't have to be politically sensitive. You can tell it like it is. The prophets weren't afraid of what the rulers were going to say. They expressed their condemnation of what was wrong, their commendation of what was right. And therefore, I think we come with moral authority, Rev, as you've said a number of times, and moral authority gives you the responsibility of speaking with moral clarity. Thou shalt not. This is right, this is wrong. And I think that kind of language has to be broadcast as often as possible. The commandments tell you what to do and what not to do. And it's not like, it could be this way. Well, maybe you could have it this way. It's not, as Dominic said, don't make excuses. This is the way it is, and this is the way it has to be told. And I think we're not afraid to say it, but we need to hear others echoing the same kind of sentiment.
Mm-hmm. Dominic?
I couldn't have said it better, Rabbi. It's a matter of, Pastor, to answer your question, simply tell the truth. You know whether something is morally wrong or right. You know that when you're out here protesting against Israel and you still have more than 100 hostages in captivity by Hamas, you know that that's wrong. It's wrong. And we, issue by issue, Pastor, and again, this is why I have so much respect for you, because you're about getting things done, things that need to be done. And, you know, when it comes to moral clarity, just tell the truth, speak from the heart, do what's right. Stop looking for excuses to say, well, yeah, but what about... So I hear that a lot as it relates to Israel on the radio show at night. Well, you want to talk about October 7th, but what about what happened before? Okay, whatever happened before October 7th may be wrong. But for argument's sake, let's deal with what happened to those 1,000 people on October 7th.
Right,
and we can
right.
talk about everything else, but let's discuss what's morally right and what's morally wrong. And we all know the answers to those questions.
Rev, yeah, would you mind, Rev, if I tried to convert Dominic to Judaism? Because
of course I would mind. What do you? I mean, you've been trying to convert me for how long?
No, we'll trade. I'll get you someone, you know, on your side. But to hear someone stand up and really speak so strongly, we need these kind of people.
Absolutely. And the reason why I bring up moral clarity, because you know what it states. It's about being clear about one's ethical principles and values and applying them with consistency. And that's what bothers me, the inconsistency in the application of so-called ethical principles and values. Moral clarity is what we need because that serves as a compass in our decision-making process. And especially in complex situations such as what we're facing here in the Middle East. It's moral clarity that protects us and clarifies the complex, but we are throwing it in the pot and using it to add to the complexity by not being clear. And that's why I asked the question for the two of you.
Yeah, Dominic, I mentioned to Rev last week, had a conversation with Dr. Phil, and in the program, he had two Palestinian students. And he said to them, as you said before, can you condemn October the 7th? And they said, no, you have to understand. And he said, I only asked you, can you condemn October 7th? Don't give me anything before or after this. Tell me yes or no. And they couldn't do it. They couldn't express that kind of moral clarity.
They didn't want to do it. Mm. But in refusing to answer the question, they should have thought about the young lady, Shawnee Luke, who the young lady, the Israeli citizen, young lady who went to the concert to have fun, and they paraded her body around in the back of that pickup truck where she was practically nude with very little clothing on, and she had been raped repeatedly, and her leg was broken in a way that it was abnormal. Her leg almost looked like a chicken wing, the way they had bent it out of shape. And those young people should have spoken out, but for some reason, moral clarity, they just will not. They refuse to. And then when we have the squad in Washington that makes it easy to take positions like that, that's why I don't pay attention at all to the squad, because I think it's really detrimental to what they are doing to America.
I wish the rest of the party would think that way and not cater to their thinking. Dominic, the migrant crisis. We saw something that was so heinous recently, the attack on police. We've seen other attacks. Talk about that.
Well, as far as I'm concerned, and I understand, Rabbi and Pastor, that you two believe in helping a man's brother or helping mankind, and I do too. But I frankly think that America and Americans and New York residents in the tri-state area, that we're being taken advantage of. I really feel that way. The question is, who's in the country? Have they been checked? We clearly see in that video where you have no regard for the hero police officers of the NYPD that you're kicking in the face an officer and a lieutenant and stomping on them. And then to make matters worse, Pastor and Rabbi, when you're asked, what do you think about America? You give not one but two middle fingers. Then you talk about these moped crews, one that dragged that 62-year-old woman, and the only thing that stopped her from being in a similar situation to that grandmother in New Orleans, Louisiana, where she died and her arm was literally ripped off, was the fact that she hit a metal bike rack. I just think that the city of New York, I believe that the city can argue that the laws does not apply to this migrant situation. And I really believe that we've got to secure the border. We cannot continue at this point. The way that the city is spending money, it's not fair to veterans. It's not fair to our own homeless. And okay, you feel you have to feed them, but $53 million for a prepaid credit card? And that's just a pilot program. I think it's gone way too far.
And to compound it, no bail, no jail.
Right.
Right. I mean,
and they're with mitigating circumstances that warrant some type of a bail because of the potential of flight. I mean, we have not carefully or identified these individuals. You know, that's why I say, look, you know, there's no one size fits all solution to this. But we've got to balance our need for security with our desire to extend ourselves to the foreigner, to the immigrant. I'm an immigrant. I came to the United States, but I got established legally. We need to set something up where we can triage these individuals to know who's coming into the nation and having some type of a path towards either assimilation into American society or back home.
Right.
There's no in between to this.
Look, you need borders. Well, but you also need borders within. There are things you can't do within the country when you're here. You attack police, you rob people, you rape people, and there's no consequence to it. What message does that send? Is it any wonder to you that a 91-year-old man this past week was assaulted, right? They wanted his wallet. What's going to happen when they catch the guy? Very little. That's the message we send.
We already know probably what's going to happen.
Yeah.
Because we have, and I didn't mean to cut you off, Rabbi, we have district attorneys with all due respect that are bending over backwards over each other to prove how I don't want to use the word lenient, how fair they can be to defendants. And there's one thing to be said for that, but we've gone way, way, way too far to the other side. Mm.
And that's the problem. We the pendulum has swung in our history. The last 100 years, when you look at our criminal justice system, the pendulum swings from punitive justice. And then when we react to what's going on with that, it swings back to restorative justice instead of balancing the two.
Right.
That's where the future lies. And that's going to be the only solution, a balance between those two.
Yeah. Rev, we've come to the end of the segment. And I just want to say, Dominic, I'm so proud that I've helped you overcome your shyness over the years, that you're able to speak out without fear of repercussion. Now, you know what? It's refreshing to hear you today and over the years. You know, I once mentioned Harry Truman. When he would get up to speak, the audience would scream, "Give him hell, Harry." And he would answer, "I don't give him hell. I tell the truth, but they think it's hell." And you're not afraid to tell the truth, and I think people respect you even more that way. Thank you so much.
So, right, wait, Rabbi, I'm going to squeeze a little bit more out of him. He's a political commentator, and we haven't asked him about the state of politics in America. Before you go, Dominic, you've got to weigh in. Tell us, what's the major issue in the state of politics here in our nation?
The major issue, Pastor, and thank you for that question, is immigration, sealing the border, crime, perception. The perception by Americans is that we're not doing too well.
Mm-hmm.
You go to get gas, you go to the grocery store. We know what it's like. I want to close by stating this, that Black History Month, it should mean for all of us, not just African Americans, that you don't have the right to do less than your best. People died for the opportunities, black and white, in terms of what we have. And I want to go full circle. Pastor, you are phenomenal. You know, it. I don't know why in life we don't give people credit until it's their funerals. And I want to go on record to say thank you, Pastor Bernard, for what you have done for the city of New York, for the country. Rabbi, you have been there for me from day one. I want to say thank you to you, Rabbi. Both of you men are phenomenal, phenomenal, phenomenal leaders. And you're modest. You don't like to talk about it or get credit for it, but you're going to get credit on this day right here on this Sunday, because it's credit that is that you deserve, and your work has been well deserved in terms of helping so many other people. Thank you for having me, gentlemen.
Wait, forget the end of the program. Let's keep going. Don't stop. Dominic, you're on a roll.
Dominic Carter, what a way to end this segment.
What a privilege to be with you and to know you all these years, because you have also brought so much to the city of New York. You're a role model, and we are so thankful to have you as part of our extended family.
Yeah, thank you so much, Dominic, for being on the show. Keep doing what you're doing.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Thank you very much.
Bye-bye.
We wish you the best. God bless. And stay tuned for more of The Rev and the Rabbi right here on 77 WABC. We'll be right back.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.